Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the FinTech Scotland podcast. With the summer holidays, we've had to take a short break, so I hope you didn't miss us too much. So we're back with another great episode and some really fantastic guests as usual. Today, we'll be speaking about how open finance is revolutionizing lending with new solutions and new technologies that are coming on the market to disrupt the lending sector. So in this episode, we'll look at how open finance is changing the status quo and look at some fantastic examples of fintech innovation. We'll also look at how credit bureaus are adapting and partnering with fintechs to evolve their models. So to do that, I'm very pleased today to welcome our two guests who are not only experts in their fields, but also great people, the type of person you would want to have around the table and talk to for hours, really. So first of all, we've got Crawford Taylor, CEO and founder at the FinTech Newt, one of the fast-growing Scottish fintechs. Crawford, thank you so much for being with us today.
Delighted to be here with you, Mikhail, and also with you, Robert. Thank you so much. And it's not often I get called expert and great person in the one sentence, so we're off to a good start.
Well, it's all genuine. From the day we met about 5 years ago and you knew it was still an idea, I thought, wow, what a great idea, what a great entrepreneur as well. So delighted to have you with us on the episode today. Do you want to introduce Newt to our audience?
We'd love to, yes. It was 5 years ago. I was a consulting actuary, advising some of the biggest pension funds in the UK, like Aviva and SSE, the energy company. Left that to start Newt. And the whole premise behind Newt is to help people through the complexity of the financial system and making it really, really easy and faster for them. And it's a goal-based approach. So if you go into banks or building societies, websites or asset managers, in a way it's product-driven, from mortgages to insurance to current accounts and investment accounts, where we are looking to solve the underlying desire of the customer. I want to retire in a healthy way, or I want to save for my children. And our first vertical, which we've launched, we want to save for and buy our first home. So we launched in March 21, and it's going incredibly well. Although if anybody's out there thinking of starting a new venture, there's a lot of ups and downs about it, more ups than downs, which is great. I'd like to chat with anybody on that, but it's well worth it.
Fantastic. And yeah, you mentioned Robert. We've got also Robert McKinney with us today on this podcast. Robert is head of product at Equifax. Great to have you with us today, Robert.
Thanks, Mikhail. I appreciate the opportunity to come on this call. So I've been on Equifax now for just over 6 years. And as you say, head up products, looking after our consumer product lines. So basically all your data as an individual that we get in from lenders, how we take that and use that to support new lending requests across the entire customer lifecycle. So from origination, account management, debt management, and a range of sectors. So banks, telcos, utilities, auto, retail, debt, you name it. Data kind of helps inform who you are as an individual, your risk profile, your affordability. And then I also have an identification, fraud and compliance product suite. So basically you are who you say you are. You live where you say you live. Money laundering, AML checks and the like. So yeah, a bit of a broad set of offerings. And within obviously consumer, there's the very apt open banking elements, which is not really a new thing. It's been on the go for a number of years now, but it's a very important tool in the armoury of Equifax as a business and a lot of our clients, and that's why it's adoption and use across the fintech community. So I'm happy to talk about, you know, how we're using it, etc. And before that, I was a career banker in the Royal Bank of Scotland. I still can't bring myself to call it NatWest. It's always Royal Bank for me. Just one of those things.
Fabulous. Great. So I wanted to start with a bit of a provocation. I like that because that usually gets some great conversations. So we're speaking about the bureaus and we're speaking about the current lending model for the sector here in the UK. doesn't need to be disrupted? What needs to evolve? Why is open finance relevant, I guess? So if we start by what's broken and what doesn't work today, I'm not sure if Crawford or Robert, you want to start?
I'm happy to. I'm happy to. I mean, personally, I think open banking is magnificent. It was a great idea. And just to clarify for the audience, what we do at Nude, for example, is we connect in with people's bank accounts, pull all their income expenditure, what they're spending their money on, from their bank accounts, and whether that be NatWest, RBS, whatever you want to call it, HSBC, Revolut, Monzo, multiple accounts. And with the customer's consent, you can analyze it all and provide services to customers. I can go through some of the services that he deals with. It can be improved. I mean, it's working incredibly well. So the bank connections are relatively stable. We use a third party for those bank connections, so we're not having to manage it all ourselves. So you think of all the banks in the UK. I suppose not all banks are linked up as yet, and apologies to Virgin Money or Clydesdale Bank, but I don't think they're linked up. Metro, the last time, was with 3 or 4 months ago, I looked at it. Metro maybe are not linked up. So not all banks are linked up. So that could be improved. You also need, I think, still to give consent every 3 months to reconnect your accounts. So I'm not sure we really need that, but that's something for regulators to think about as well. And it's relatively stable. We needed to do a lot of work. It'd be interesting to get Robert's view on it, to enrich the data. And what I mean by that is you get all the data from various banks and they classify and have it in different formats. So we did all of that and then enrich it. And what I mean by enrich is categorize it. So if you're spending in, say, Amazon, what are you actually buying in Amazon? Is it renewing your Prime membership or is it actually buying goods or services? If you go to Tesco, are you buying fuel or food, etc.? So we went through a lot. Uber is another one. Different merchants program up Uber in different ways. Some capitalization, some are lowercase, and it's called different things at different places, etc. So we do a lot of work on that to actually get consistent data. Albeit it's really great now. I think we're up to over 99% accuracy across that and reading the descriptions as well. So there's improvements. And the big win, I think, is payments, whereby we use direct debits and it's the clunky. I mean, 3 days to the money to leave customers' bank accounts to them actually reaching us. We use faster payments system for one-off contributions. But what's round the corner coming soon is what's known as variable recurring payments. And that will be another great step forward in open banking.
Yeah, so I agree with everything that has just been said. I mean, I think open banking, from my perspective, as the Bureau, so clearly the Bureau data tells me you've made payments, you've missed payments, etc. And it's always the same argument or outlook of your past performance is a strong indicator of future performance, and that's how scoring models, etc., have always been built. What we're doing now with open banking is we're complementing that with a more recent view of your spending patterns and your habits. Because the Bureau data can be 6 to 8 weeks old, just the time of loading, and then making it accessible, whereas your open banking is pulled there and then and goes back either, well, whatever timeline you want, 3, 6, 9, 12, 18, 24, 60 months, you can choose how much data you want to collect. You just got to bear in mind as a current account or a credit card, there's a lot of data, a lot of transactions if you think about your own bank statements. And as Crawford said, I mean, the categorization is the important bit in that. So we've obviously got our categorization engine and we take it and we put it into 660 buckets. I summarise that into 60, and then we create what we call characteristics or variables that clients can use to inform decisions. Now, that decision, again, typically it's used at point of origination, but it's been seen to be used more at account management stages. Once you give it in, is everything okay? And then also at the debt side of things, if you've missed payments, you want to do an income and expenditure, then again, you can use Open Banking to automate that. There still are bits, and I know Crawford mentioned it there about some payments. Yeah, it's based on what's in your bank statement. So if you shopped at Tesco, Tesco could be petrol, it could be the store, it could be insurance. So yeah, pretty accurate, but sometimes you cannot get it 100%, which is why 99%, very good rate, I would suggest. And therefore, it's how you take that and recognise you want a bit of human interaction to just check everything's okay. But certainly, our clients that use it in the debt management space, they're doing it because it takes away a 20-minute phone call with a customer. They can send the links out. They can get the customer to consent. It automatically happens. Then they can have probably a 5-minute call back, say, let's just walk through the detail, make sure everything's accurate, and then we can form that arrangement to pay if that's what's required or whatever the nature of the conversation is. So I think all of those things mean the open banking. That's why, certainly from ourselves, we've seen it with Experian Boost, not that I want to promote a competitor, but we've got Equifax 360, which is that rounded view of the customer taken in their bureau profile and their open banking data, so that you've got that, I say, 360 view. But then it is that move on ultimately from open banking to open finance to open data. There's very much the start of the journey with open data. So, and it's from my perspective, people still refer to us as a credit reference agency. We see ourselves more as a data, insight, and technology business. More data, better insights, and then we deliver it through the right technology. So for us, this is absolutely the right direction of travel. It's really the use cases with open banking, looking at the breadth of clients we have, are vast. I mean, it's not just, it's back to, it's a consented journey. I have to consent to share my data, and I have to say, know why my data and where it's going to be used. So if I don't consent, and if I do consent, it has to be used for the purpose that's stated, which is an important bit. So you can't put in, well, you shouldn't put in one thing. You say, I'm going to use it for application assessment to validate income. That's your use case. Right, that's what it's getting used for. But you can use it for marketing purposes, for clear insights to where you're spending your money. You can use it for provisioning, for bad debt, for capital. You can use it basically as a variety of all linked towards credit risk. But fundamentally, that's where people went to. And again, I would say open banking isn't just for consumers. It equally applies to small business, commercial bank accounts as well. They can get tapped into. But and as Crawford also said about one of the constraints, yeah, not all banks have created an API. That's 100% accurate. But we've actually got an alternate solution for that, which is that you can upload your bank statements. We'll OCR them, optical character recognition, take out all the data, and then present it back as open banking transactional insights. So you get the benefits of open banking in terms of insight and account spend patterns, but not having gone through a full open banking journey. But we do expect there'll be more people still building the API links and therefore more data coming in a truly digital fashion. So, yeah.
So we're moving from, to get credit, you need credit, really. You need a credit file, to a place where people with no credit file or very thin credit file, thinking about people moving into the UK or young people, and that's why I want to go back to Crawford. Open banking is really making getting your first home a lot easier. So it's all about accessibility, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
interesting. I think and young people are a lot more open to sharing data in this way. But it's interesting you said you need to have credit to get credit. And I've got three children, two of which are going through that process of they're over 18 now. They need a credit card or to get credit. And unfortunately, you do. And it just seems crazy that we encourage people to take out credit to get more credit. And hopefully, over time, lenders will realise that actually savers might be better targeted in some cases, and just open banking will negate the fact for people to actually have credit in the first place. Because lending is so, so important in the UK and overseas. I think something like there's household debt is something like 2,000 billion worth of household debt in the UK. That's 2 trillion, right? So it's 2 with a lot of zeros attached to it, which equates to something like £80,000 worth of debt per household, of which something like 2,000 is credit card debt. So in a way, we should be using open banking to help people save rather than just lend. But there are occasions when people need lending. Short-term needs, buying a home. Nobody can buy a home for suddenly conjure up £200,000-£300,000 for a home. So I think we should, in a responsible way, we need to think about, one, we want to encourage people to get credit for credit, because it's a very good point you made there, Mikhail. And then also try and encourage people to wean themselves off of debt all the time. Is it really necessary?
And Robert, just to complement that, I guess the bureaus have been around for quite a while, and you've just said that you're transitioning to being known more as a data insight company. Yeah. Which seems very sensible. But there's a lot of new entrants now trying to do that. So you've been in a space which probably has been quite undisrupted for many years. How are you approaching that new wave of innovators? Are you working with them? Are you competing with them? Are you trying to develop your own technologies? How does it work at Equifax?
Yeah. No, that's a fair question. I think all of the above is a short answer. So if you take open banking as an example, we originally partnered with AccountScore. So they were the AISP, so they had the license. We did a bit of a review of different providers, and we went, AccountScore is the one for us. And eventually, after 3.5 years of working with them collaboratively on solutions, blending our data, etc., we acquired AccountScore. So they're now part of Equifax. So that's one model. Yes, we are active in engaging with the fintech sector, which is why one of the reasons why we're members of Fintech Scotland is we want to understand what's happening in the market, because a lot of organisations, certainly the big banks as an example, they were hesitant about working with the fintech community years ago when I was a boy. But now it's actively encouraged that people want to be more agile, want to be fleet of foot, want to try something different. And that also comes to the data that we hold. We need to get broader sets of data, the new insights piece, and make better decisions, because the regulators also pushing for that time and time again. And they're kind of given, they're actually been quite explicit about affordability. They're saying you've got to use open source techniques, otherwise open banking, to help assess affordability. So we're being directed, but we're also recognising and understanding what our different clients need. And we're saying, right, okay, how do we do it? So some things we will build, and they play absolutely into our skill set. Other things where there is specialisms, and I'm going to go into the likes of fraud, biometrics, cybersecurity. We're not a master of everything. So we will partner, and we will work with that partner to either collaborate and create something new and different, innovative in the market, or we will look to sell their offering as Equifax, because we know our clients need it. So there's a few different flavours in there that we're more than open to help us help our clients, in effect, deliver good customer outcomes. And certainly the consumer scale of things with Consumer Duty, it has been a key part of, you know, everyone's looking at vulnerability and concerns about that. So it's, again, what's the data that we have? And a prime example is the one that Crawford said of, yes, there are what we call thin file customers from a bureau perspective. So they don't have a history of having had credit, therefore their bureau file is very thin. There's not much in it. But you can look at the transactional data from their current account. They might not have borrowed on it, and it had an overdraft, but you can see the money in, the money out, what they've been spending it on, and you can get a real set of insights, and it is predictive as to the performance that customer's going to have. So again, I'm going to go back to, it's more data, it's more insight. And as more and more, so we get into open insurance, pensions dashboard, the utility sector, more data is going to become accessible. Then it's important we are there as a data business to tap into it and deliver it to our clients, because what does everyone want? They want a quick decision, less questions in an application form, and just make it less onerous, but it has to be robust, accurate, and well managed. So you're playing with both sides all the time. And because we don't do the lending, we have to give the right information to our clients to make a good lending decision. So yeah, there's a lot of moving parts.
And you spoke about affordability, and Crawford mentioned affordability as well. With open banking, obviously, there's so much more data that it's probably easier, or it's probably faster to judge someone's affordability. Have you seen a decrease in what's called, and I don't like that term, but mortgage delinquency, where people cannot pay their mortgage, especially in those difficult times? Is open banking helping people, helping banks lend to the right people a lot better?
It does help them lend to the right people. I think you'll always have the situation where there's a change in customer circumstances. So there's a bereavement, there's a health concern, those things which open banking, it's not going to give you that insight to understand the consequences for that customer and their change in their financial circumstances if one income's not going to be there. But yes, so open banking has certainly helped get under the skin of affordability. A lot of lenders still use ONS data or the like to work out affordability. So that's an average of your cost of living expenses. It's not wrong. So they'll take your bureau commitments, financial lending, your cost of living expenses off your income, say you're left with this amount. That's fine, but it's not specifically yours as an individual. What, in my opinion, is better is if I actually use your open banking data, your spend profile, then I can say, yeah, looking at you and your past performance, you can't afford it, or it looks like you can adjust your cloth to fit to make that debt repayable. So, yeah, we're seeing more lenders through the open banking journey and see the value of it. And that's why we're seeing more and more consumers taking up the journey, because the value for them is speed of decision, when they're going to get the lend. And in the current climate, with certainly interest rates being quite variable, people need to secure the rate quite quickly. Having to go, I'm going to get a bank statement, I'm going to then file them in, get that assessed, it can add days, weeks onto the journey. Open banking gets you there same day, typically, depending on how active the lender is.
It's very interesting what you said, because open banking data is still past data. Now, I believe, Crawford, that Nuit is actually being quite innovative in that space, and you've just launched an AI product which will be able to create models and maybe look at affordability in the future. Do you want to say a few things about that?
Yeah, we've developed AI Copilot, we're calling it. Although we'll actually go out to market with the Codewarium Copilot, but it seems to be catching on, whereby we use three sets of data: one, customers' personal data; two, their goal-based data, so we're very focused on what customers want to achieve. First-time home ownership, I want to live in Leith in Edinburgh, for example, for a one-bedroom flat, 250,000, it might take me 5 years to save a deposit for that, so that's the goal. And then we help customers get there, and then using the bank transaction data to analyze that and give them ideas to help them get there sooner, like automatically redoing their energy bill, their mobile phone contract, or cutting back in some of their expenditure, such as home delivery food, etc. And then also comparing that against people like you as well. So people like you who have just bought a car generally take out insurance. They get a card for petrol that gives them reduced petrol. They might want a few other products as well. So you can start getting a picture for what people like you end up doing as well. And as you say, start predicting the future and helping customers along their journey as well. But one question I did have, maybe for Robert, it's a bit unfair to, in some way. what we're seeing is a bigger and bigger take up of the product known as buy now, pay later. And it worries me slightly that because you've got open banking and your records are now being exposed in a much more granular way, which is good because it actually helps the industry price it better. So it's fairer in the overall pricing, yeah? And the customers as well, it should be better because they're not taking out something they can't ultimately afford as well. But they might be doing things that actually might harm them as well because they might not be able to get lending because they've got these buy now, pay later. Gambling as well, we're seeing that over the last 2 or 3 years as an increase in more and more people gambling. So I think there's some responsible things we can do to help people realise these things and analyse as well. And I'm just wondering from Robert, is that something else you're seeing and how are you incorporating that into your thinking with lending?
Yeah, well, so absolutely. So buy now, pay later, it is such a, it's a boom industry and it has been. I mean, I think it was Treasury recently put out a note to say, to date, they've been going, yeah, we're going to make it mandatory. All buy now, pay later providers have to report to the credit reference agencies. But then last week they went, we're thinking again about that. We might not make that mandatory. And personally, I think that's a backward step. I think everyone should be reporting because what we're looking to do with buy now, pay later is not factor it into your traditional credit score. We'll make a separate set of characteristics and scores available. And it's up to lenders how they want to introduce that into their policy. So not, therefore, say your score, because you had 5 buy now, pay later, that's a good or a bad thing. We'll say, well, yeah, they've all been paid off on time. Do you want to layer that into your decision-making? Lender X, yes, there's the data. You can make it accessible. Do you want to make that available into your affordability assessment? Then yes. Because, again, a lot of it is it's the short term. You know, 3 payments and it's done and it's finished. Is that, which is a, it is a very short window of lending. But again, it's another lens of, if you've had it and you've paid it off well, then it's a good thing that should be reflected in your credit report. If you've had it and you've not paid it off well, then you know what, it should also be reflected to say it's not gone the way it should have done. So I think that's absolutely fine. But yeah, we want to get more buy now, pay later data. There is a lot of traditional lending. It's still a loan that, or some of the banks have done a credit card but called it buy now, pay later. We have that data. There's lots of, however, it's the real short-term stuff that we want to have more line of sight of. Because, as you say, you mentioned it already, Crawford, the younger members of the community, kind of, they're on various websites. They might be more, but I do want that pair of shoes. I do want X purchase. What frustrates me, again, personally, is you then see some, like a pizza company saying, you can buy a pizza, you can pay it and buy now, pay later. You're going, wait a minute, it's a £10 pizza. Come on. I think there should be lines drawn as to what is eligible for buy now, pay later and what is not. But that's, we've got to work with the regulators on that. We can't enforce that at all as a bureau. But our mission is and our intent is to get as much data as possible to inform our clients on what's happening with that consumer's finances. So, yeah, by the way, I think it's a good thing. I think the market needs it. It is low cost, which is a positive as well. But we're seeing, certainly we watch it globally, and there's a number of providers are going out of the market because it's a costly, you know, they earn pennies per transaction. So it's fine margins and they've got to be making sure they're doing the right lend to the right customer. So yeah, it's one that we'll have to continue to watch. But the benefit of open banking is you can't see the payment going in, but you can see the payments coming out. So you can see it a different way. But yeah, our view is we want to report it, but report it separately and not just wrap everything in this one big view. We've always liked to be kind of granular in our view. We show characteristics, current address, previous address, linked address, for example, applicant, second applicant. So you always know why you made that decision and what data you made it. And we're going to follow that approach through with our treatment of buy now, pay later.
Very good. I'm afraid that's all we've got time for today. I think we could go on for a few hours on the subject, but it was great to listen to the two of you and your wonderful Scottish accents. There's a, you know, I looked at the analytics of this podcast the other day. There's people from 50 different countries listening to us. So hopefully Scottish accent give them a good flavor or how we speak here in Scotland. Not me personally. I've got a very strong French accent, but the two of you, I've got a beautiful Scottish accent. So thank you for joining us. And it was great to have you. Thank you for your contributions. We'll be back very soon with another episode. On this time we'll be on best practice to raise Series A investment and beyond. So stay tuned and subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss it.